Hello, and welcome to Required Reading, the podcast that revisits the most impactful books from our childhood. I'm your host, Erin Bowles. I am a writer, actor, and comedian, and this is our final Camp Required Reading episode for the summer. Our guest today is returning from our Little Prince episode, Kelsey Buckley. Kelsey is an MSW student in her final year at the Erickson Institute. She will graduate in May 2026, which she is very excited about. Presently a nanny by day, grad student by night. In another life, Kelsey was a theater camp aficionado, attending different acting camps every summer between the ages of 7 and 18. You may recognize her from the two separate times she played Frenchie in Greece when she was in high school. Kelsey currently enjoys birding, scented candles, and collecting children's books. Hello.
Hi, Erin.
Our book today is from 2010, Theater Geek by Mickey Rapkin, the real
Oh,
life
yes.
drama of a summer at Stage Door Manor at the famous performing arts camp. Tell me how this book came into your life. You contacted me and was like, I finally figured it out. Let me talk about this book.
Okay, so I don't know how exactly it came into my life. I think that it was just as simple as like, I heard that there was a book called Theater Geek, and I was like, sign me up. I know that I read it first, and then I like passed the copy around to my other friends, and we all read this book about this theater camp that none of us could ever dream of affording. I did go to theater camp every summer. I would have loved to go to Stage Door Manor, but it was simply not in the budget, which is something that I think is very interesting about this story in general, is just like there's so many like name drops of people who are currently famous or the children of famous people. And I just remember reading it and being like, oh, this sounds so glamorous, when really these are just regular kids who are just 5 years older than me.
Yeah, Stage Door Manor is a theater camp in upstate New York that is, I think, three sessions. Each one is 3 weeks for kids ages 10 to 18. And at the end of each 3 week period, they stage, at least in 2010, 13 musicals. And Mickey Rapkin, who also wrote Pitch Perfect, the book, tags along 1 year as an adult to see what happens. He tags along the year that they decide to only do Sondheim.
It's not only Sondheim,
Oh.
which is how I remember it.
Yeah.
But no, there's randomly, like, they call it a Sondheim festival, but I think there's only something like four Sondheim musicals that go up that summer. So it's like a festival in like a children's type of way.
I was looking at their Instagram and their website today, and I think today is the last day of camp. And I think today is the day that everyone is coming in to see the performances and some of the shows happening today. Six, the Henry VIII Wives musical, You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown, Big, the musical,
Of course.
Fame, You're in Town, which I think they mentioned doing before. Guys and Dolls and Dear Evan Hansen, among some of the many
Wow.
performances.
That was also the other thing, was like in like the theater kid community, you knew that like they would always workshop like the high school versions of things at Stage Door. And so you knew if something was at Stage Door that like maybe we could do it at my school in a couple years.
That's true. They would like popular Broadway musicals because it was so close, because it was upstate New York, would come in and say, we want to, try to sell this to high schools for them to be able to put on, but we have to figure out how to turn Sweeney Todd into high school.
I think there's a mention in the book of them trying to come up with a high school appropriate version of Rent,
Yes.
which I have no idea how you would completely manage to make that happen. But apparently, at Stage Door, they found a way.
And I'm glad you mentioned it is like page after page of name drop. And part of that is like, I mean, not a bad thing. Like that's why, he's going through and he's like, these are the stars that this place has cultivated. But they are almost all, or at least the one, and this makes sense. There's so many Nepo babies. I started tallying them up and keeping the list, and I was like, this is not productive, Erin. This is like kind of a waste of time. But like a lot of the ones that, I mean, Robert Downey Jr. is one. It's right there in the name.
I believe that at some point he mentions Tommy Hilfiger's daughter, which is like, I didn't even know that that was a person, but like,
Yeah.
of course, she was at Stage Door.
And at the time this book is written, which is 15 years ago, I think they quote the tuition at $5,000. It is currently $7,000. It's actually
Wow.
$6,995.
That is how much I am paying for a semester of grad school. So.
And I think there are scholarships. I know they mention that in the book. There's like they. I liked the structure because Mickey Rapkin is, giving some of the history of the camp, but also says like we're gonna focus in on three seniors and their performance and their journey. I thought that was really great. But yeah, $7,000. But I will say I really like that it is first come, first serve. They start talking about we're so popular, maybe we need to, have kids audition before they come in. And they say, like, no. Then we are asking, what can the campers give us? And the whole point is that we are giving things to the campers.
Which is something that I absolutely love. And it's something that I've been reflecting on a lot as an adult who used to do childhood theater and like theater kid, running around doing like summer shows at like local community theaters. The way that it felt so competitive. And in a lot of ways, it felt like the camps that you would go to where like you show up and everybody gets a part. Sometimes that could feel like, ugh, what a drag. No real chance for people to prove themselves or their talent. But the fact that, like, this, which is like the biggest scale version of like this model, the fact that even this, like, huge, grandiose thing with all of these famous alumni, and it's still grounded in this thing of like, this is a fun place for kids to come out and learn how to put on a play.
Tell me all about your summer theater camp
Oh
experiences.
man, yeah. I mean, I had so my summer theater camp experience. I 5 or 6 years old, maybe seven, I started doing at just like the local rec center. I would go to like act out, like I think the first thing I was ever in was called Mother Goose Bakery. Like it was just very basic. And from there I started going to like the more intense camps and ones that called themselves like Young Actor Training Program. I went to one that was particularly notable because it was called Makin' Movies. And we all like learned about how to be on a film set, and then everybody came up with a character that they thought it would be fun to play. And the owner of the camp wrote all of those characters into a movie that we then made that I still have on DVD. And yeah, I mean, I went to all kinds of stuff. I also was doing just like summer theater. I was in Greece, obviously, as aforementioned. I was in Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat. And then my last 2 years of high school, I went to a camp that's like similar in structure to what we read about in this book about Stage Door, where I would show up. I think it was like, it might have been 2 weeks, but I think it was three, where we would show up and we would just do plays. Everybody got cast in a role and there was like an award ceremony at the end. And that was probably the most fun that I had at any theater camp.
Was that a sleepaway camp, like Stage Door?
It was a sleepaway camp. So the others were all day camps. And then I went to, it was called TALS Camp, TAL. It was named after like a theater director in high school theater in Texas. And they named it in his honor. And it was like on a college campus at Southwestern in Georgetown, Texas. And it was just so much fun. You felt like such a real adult, like being like, well, I have to go to rehearsal, but maybe we can talk in the dorms after that.
Oh man. Yeah, I think I mean, there's appeal for so many reasons, but I think something really intoxicating about it is that there is structure, but you can determine sort of how you spend your own time and you can stay up till 2 in the morning running lines. And so much of it talks about like, why does this matter? Why is it important? And the biggest stretch is that, this gives kids who don't fit in a place to fit in. To be seen, to try, to fail, which I think is something they talk about in a really lovely way. But you mentioned there was sort of like you knew about Stage Door, like obviously from this book. How like what was the talk of the town? What was that like in the reputation?
Well, I remember that there was one point when one of my friends in her speech class was supposed to give a speech about a book, and she did her speech about this book. And there was a girl in her class who heard about it and thought that that sounded really cool, and then ended up going to Stage Door later on, which we were all just incredibly jealous of. But yeah, I mean, I think that I primarily did know about it through this book. And it was just kind of this like looming presence in the back of my mind at any theater camp that I was at was like, well, I wonder if they're doing like more high class work at Stage Door. Of course, I was much more interested in like, I viewed myself as like a very serious young actress. I wasn't really interested as much in the musical theater side of things, but I would have done anything to go. Just have a chance to see like what role they would have cast me in if I had been there.
I like that you, well, just in terms of casting, they say like you audition the very first day and then like that night the cast list comes out and you scurry around. But I like that you said you considered yourself a very serious young actress because I think that is the appeal of it, is
Oh,
to be
absolutely.
taken seriously. And there's a moment where Rapkin says like these kids want to be challenged. They want more of them to be asked for than, you know, than their typical program in their high school or whatever. And it is that to be taken seriously, to be seen. There's even a line somewhere in it that's like, what if I tell you for 3 weeks you can be treated and exist as the adult you want to be one day? Like, of course that's the goal. Of course you're gonna keep coming back to that year after year and be. It sounds so like reading it as an adult, God, that sounds unpleasant. Just like kids going out, like foaming at the mouth in the middle of the summer in the heat. But I think that's like that's the appeal, is that you can go full
Absolutely.
tilt. Yeah.
No, and that's something that I have also been thinking about a lot these last couple of weeks as I've been kind of like reflecting on this period of my life and reading this book. It reads very differently as an adult than it did as a kid. As a kid, I read it and I was like, oh my God, this is a book about paradise. And in a lot of ways, you read it as an adult and you're like, that does sound like so much fun. You understand why Mickey Rapkin is so invested in everything that's going on with these kids and why he's so interested in this topic, writing this story. But there's another angle of it as an adult that you read and you're just absolutely horrified. I also ended up going and getting my BFA in acting for undergrad. And I remember like thinking that like part of it is that the professors are mean to you. That's what you want. You want to be yelled at and verbally berated for not being emotionally vulnerable enough because that's how you achieve true greatness, which is just such a twisted way of thinking. But I have to admit that that is the way that I thought about things. And I remember one of the teachers at the theater camp that I went to, it was at the Dallas Theater Center. I went to this camp for probably 5 summers. And one of our teachers, when we would do dress rehearsals, would sit in the back row of the theater and she would yell, "Boring!" And I just loved that. I would brag about that when I got back to my regular high school theater program. I was like, no. I'm treated like a real adult. I think there was some like idea in my brain that like to be verbally abused was to be treated like an adult.
Yeah, I'm glad you bring that up because I appreciated that Rapkin in the telling of it talks about the history of the camp and the founders and some of the, you know, instrumental teachers. And there is the one refrain that did stick with me is that like the most famous teacher threw chairs at kids. That was the specific detail, was threw chairs at kids. So like I really want to, you know, dive into how it's different reading it at different ages because I throughout this, I was just like, there's so many opportunities for kids to be taken advantage of, which, you know, I hate that that's the place that your mind goes to. And they talk about like, you know, well, kids are doing drugs. It's the 90s, it's the 80s. And yeah, some of them are making out with 20 somethings, but that's what it is. And there are so many kids. I was not in theater in, at all growing up. Like I did skits like at the end of Girl Scout camp, but that was about it because I just didn't, I hadn't grown that like vulnerability bone that is so essential to acting. But so many that I know have stories about the adults in their theater life behaving badly. They're like, I have a theater director who just, and so that I'd love to sort of look at, drill down on those differences that you spotted.
Yeah, I mean, I also have like at least three that immediately spring to mind stories of adults who it's just appalling thinking about the way that I was spoken to, the things that happened. And I look at my young self. I think that a lot of people are kind of like waking up to this mentality. I try to look at my young self as somebody who deserves to be protected. And wowie, wow, I was in so many outrageous situations. Reading this as an adult, it just feels like, well, yes, but they are kids, you know? And another thing that really stuck out to me was this feeling of, this is a place where kids who don't fit in feel like they can fit in. But there's also a certain, there's a little bit of talk about like, oh, well, this kid was like a nerd at school and nobody talks to him at school. And then he comes to Stage Door and he really fits in and he thrives, right? And that was an experience that I had as well. Like at school, I was not really anybody. And then I would go off to theater camp and I had this level of talent that like made me somebody. And I don't want to speak to anybody else's experience except for my own. But what I will say is that I was a monster. Getting that tiny little taste of being able to like really be viewed as somebody, having people think that I was like enviable in any way, I was diabolical. And so I think that that's an interesting thing that doesn't get talked about very much either, is the way that the adults kind of play into that and encourage kids to, well, no, you've got the talent, babe. Because I don't think that there were really any adults in my life who were like, no, go forth and be a tyrant, rule with an iron fist, baby Kelsey. But there is a certain amount of the adults who devote their lives to this craft. They do, of course, really have a high regard for the young actors that they are like helping mold and shape and, just grow up regular. And so that level of esteem that is held, I think, translates to the other campers who maybe don't have quote unquote it. And that's another piece that I think ought to be discussed.
Yeah, I think just as you're saying that, I'm sort of realizing like the theater geek applies, of course, to more than just the campers. It is also the staff. Like
Oh,
you said, they are the
absolutely.
people who they are just as down bad. Although I actually they mentioned frequently Jeanine Tesori, who wrote Fun Home. And I think
Right.
they actually might be doing Fun Home today.
Oh,
I'm not
wow.
sure.
Well, I'll bet
Which would
she's
be
there.
so cool. She was a staff member. Yeah. So yeah, it's really interesting to think that like it's I'm trying to think of the idiom that's like the monkeys running the circus or something.
I believe it's like the prisoners running the jail, something like
Yeah,
that.
something
But
like that.
absolutely that. Yeah.
The owners of the camp die and their daughters step in, and their daughters are like very reasonable people, I think, who are able to be like, let's remember that they're kids. There's a line somewhere in it that's like the founding members and early ideologies, like we want to treat kids like they're tiny adults. And that's such a red flag now. That's like, no, they're actually not. Like you said, they are kids. And that's really important.
Right, and it's important to keep them safe. It's also important to, I don't want to say keep them humble, but I think that there is a certain amount of like the social emotional development that happens at summer camp where, at any summer camp, I would say that there's like a certain level more independence. You're away from your parents, you've got these camp counselors who most of the time are probably like 19 years old, getting college credit or, in between semesters. And so there is like a certain amount of like these children's social and spiritual development is held in the very tenuous grasp of these people who just kind of want to like goof around and like make good art. Something that I think about a lot is like how seriously you have to, as somebody who is working with kids in like, like doing a play, something like that, the amount that you have to like lock in and be like, okay, I know that I'm about to talk to a room full of fourth graders. And then you be like, guys, what are we doing? this is not professional.
Yeah.
The conviction that it takes to take your own self so seriously that you can ask children to take themselves seriously, whether or not they want to, right? Because kids will be kids. And even if they really view themselves as serious young actors, they're gonna goof off sometimes and they're not going to remember all of their lines or their choreography. And then having to like stand up as the authority in the room is a very challenging role.
Yeah, it is interesting. I've talked to a lot of people about like, God, I wish there was a summer camp for adults. And I have to wonder how much of the staff like get that sort of wish fulfillment. Although there is one crazy detail that when the campers arrive at the beginning of the summer, they arrive to staff members giving applause. That was diabolical to me. That was hilarious. But you mentioned sort of the social emotional aspect of summer camp, and I wanted just to read this passage really early on. Summer camp is a crucible, a place where lasting personality traits are formed. Camp provides children with a place to experiment, a place to explore different aspects of their personalities in a safe environment, such as the social import and merit of summer camp that social scientists have devoted lives to studying the effect of that 2 month period on self-esteem, on behavioral growth, on a host of variables. I personally, summer camp changed my life. I mean, I only went to like a 2 week Girl Scout camp every summer and some others. But yeah, I didn't have friends at school, but I had friends at camp. So there were a lot of passages in here where I could hear echoes of myself of like the school year sucks and right now sucks, but summer camp will be there. And that it keep really keeps you moving forward.
It's a strong motivation for a lot of kids, right? The theater camps that I went to, I also went to like a more traditional summer camp type thing. It was also a Christian camp where it just felt so free, you know? Like even when you're younger and you're still kind of being led around, it's this kind of feeling of just like completely unleashed. You kind of have to take care of yourself a lot more than you do when you're at home.
Yeah, I think I'm realizing more how in contrast it is to the classroom because you're outside obviously, but you can be loud, you can run around, you can be physical, you can be dirty. All of that is coming much clearer sitting here thinking about it.
Right. You get to kind of like decide things for yourself more often. I remember when I would go to that Christian sleepaway camp that I would go to. Well, every morning I was having Cocoa Puffs for breakfast. Like, there's Cocoa Puffs here. So, like, obviously that's what I'm going to have every single day. I wasn't doing that at home. I was honestly hardly even eating breakfast at home. My mom would have to like beg me to eat like a piece of toast. And then I'm at camp and I'm like, oh my God, Cocoa Puffs every day.
There's a throwaway line where there's two boys and a girl. There are three main ins. The girl has a lot of tribulations leading up to the final performance and she gets sick. And there's a line where it's like she couldn't even eat her Special K this morning. I was like, God, that's a 2010 thing, isn't it? Oh, Special K, awful cereal.
There are also references to her favorite food being ham cold cuts.
Yes.
And it's just like, yeah, the things that kids feed themselves when there's nobody like directly staring at them and choosing what they eat for them, is just hilarious.
Absolutely. This is an episode that came out maybe 2 weeks ago. Did you ever watch Camp Rock? Because
Oh,
reading
I
this while
loved
watching
Camp
Camp Rock was very interesting.
Watching Camp Rock and being like, well, this isn't really how camp works. But I also remember reading this book, telling my friends about it, and people being like, oh, so like Camp Rock.
Well, what's interesting is that, having very recently seen Camp Rock, is that it's a lot about wealth and a lot about what everyone's dad does for work. And this, Mickey Rapkin very specifically says, it's not about that here. It's not about wealth. Yeah, even though,
And
like,
I'm just not so sure about that.
no, I'm really not either. Rapkin will be talking about like John Cryer is in this, and Two and a Half Men, the highest paid person on television right now. There's transcripts of interviews tucked in the back, at least of the PDF I read. And John Cryer was like, oh yeah, I grew up backstage on Broadway because both my parents are actors, and like lists their whole resume. And so it is like, well then what? What?
It is an interesting disconnect, isn't it? There's another anecdote from early on in the book where it talks about Courtney Love dropping Frances Bean Cobain off at camp and Frances getting bullied. And so Courtney had her godmother, Drew Barrymore, call and that shut all the kids up. They said, Frances, you're getting a call from Drew Barrymore. And that shut everybody up. And it's like, okay, well, of course it's about that. I feel like when you're a kid, it's a little bit like everything's about that. And especially when you're in an environment like this where it's so heightened, and there's some kids who, you know, might come from wealth, there's some kids who might be there on some kind of scholarship, and then there's also these kids who come from this like elite showbiz family. That's gonna mean something. Of course it is.
Yeah, and there's this sort of argument going back to, you know, how there aren't auditions to get into camp, and there's this sort of idea that like, well, here finally it's a real meritocracy.
Right.
And I'm like, well, you know, it's not, because like
Right.
John
Because.
Cryer has been having lessons, you know, throughout the year or
Right.
this and that. So it's yeah, there's a lot of like, I like how you said it, there's a lot of disconnect
Yeah.
in reading this. And obviously like Rapkin is entranced. Like he wants this, of course. He's
Course.
very upfront about it. But there is the cool kids room and table. And he's like, well, no, it's just like the seniors, really. And it's like, well, no,
And it's like,
not.
no. And he says that it's also like for the most talented kids. And I'm sure that it is that, because having been to theater camp, that's how it happens. Because even if not everybody gets the chance to see each other perform, word travels. Who's good? Who's good? Who's my competition? And so I'm sure that it is that. And I'm sure that it is the seniors. And then, of course, it's also the literal famous people. Are you telling me that Natalie Portman isn't getting some kind of preferential treatment at the camp? Fuck off.
Especially Natalie Portman. That's the thing. It was like there was a picture of like, well, here's Natalie Portman and Bryce Dallas Howard while they're so young. And I was like, yeah, Natalie Portman, who is in like Oscar-nominated films at age 13, and Bryce Dallas Howard, daughter of Ron
Like, of
Howard.
course, that's your Helena and Hermia. Are you joking?
Of course it is.
And so that was the
Absolutely.
thing, is I'm reading this book as a kid, and I'm like, no, I bet that if I went there, I would get a really good role. And I'm not so sure that that is true.
Yeah, me and Natalie would be suit. She would say, "Wow, you're almost as good as me." You know?
Okay, and so that's another thing. You say Natalie without context. There's another Natalie who plays a very significant
Yes.
role in this book. And that's another thing that I find very interesting is the way that this child is described. Let me
Remind me
pull
who Natalie is. Is that the one
Natalie, her
who?
name's Natalie Walker.
Who like almost comes in to play Mrs. Lovett?
She
Okay.
comes in and she was gonna go to London over the summer, but last minute that trip gets called off. And then she's like, can I please come back to stage door?
Right. Filling in of our three leads, Rachel is our girl. She's going to be in Sweeney Todd. She's got Mrs. Lovett. She's really struggling. This is like really against her type. She doesn't think she can do it. She gets very sick the final week. And then Natalie, who has already finished high school, is like about to go be very famous or very successful, basically is asked, like, if Rachel cannot go on as Mrs. Lovett, can you? Because Natalie, you did Mrs. Lovett last year, and people will not stop talking about how good you were in it. And they're like, and Natalie and Rachel are really good friends. He writes that whole final day very well. I mean, obviously he's a theater geek. There's a lot of drama in
So
these rooms.
intense. It's a real page turner. It's like, what is going to happen? Is
Yes.
Rachel gonna go on? Is Natalie gonna have to take over? What is the emotional fallout of that going to be like? So yes, when we're talking about like, oh, these are kids, this is the way that this character of Natalie is introduced. And so there was Natalie sitting in the cafeteria in her big silver hoop earrings, each the size of an infant's skull. Of the jewelry, Natalie announces, "These are my bitch hoops." It's not just Natalie's talent that is legendary at stage door, and it is legendary. One director describes her instincts as flawless. It's her eating habits, too. Like Elizabeth Bathory, the 16th century Hungarian countess who drank the blood of virgins to maintain her dewy beauty, Natalie subsists on a singular diet as well. Pepperidge Farm goldfish crackers. At 18, with her sharp angles and long brown hair, exuding a sexuality beyond her years, Natalie's metabolism is such that she can keep up her enviable figure by sampling from one food group, carbs.
Yeah, there's so much there. My first thing is like, damn, I feel the same way about goldfish. That is my initial reaction.
It's like,
but
who among
I
us
think that's
hasn't?
part, if we could, who would not?
Who wouldn't?
We've touched on it is like you're taken seriously. They do really edgy plays. You know, they talk about a rape scene happening and they're talking about like all of these, you know, these things that these kids, whether or not they comprehend the magnitude of it, take on anyway because they have that eagerness. So it's like it's valuable to have like a sexy kid because that's a role that we're gonna need, you know? Rachel, our lead, is told frequently, like, well, no, you can't play that role because your big boobs are too big.
Your boobs are too big. She's very short, but she's got big boobs. So she can't play like the romantic lead because she's too short, but she can't play the little girl because her boobs are too big.
Which is a thing that, I mean, you're gonna hear, sadly, as a professional. You
Oh,
know,
yeah.
I just auditioned for a role where the character is described as hunchbacked and bat-faced, and I want it so bad. I want it so bad.
Oh no. I mean, that's the thing. It's like the way that they describe characters is like, do we really need the actor to know that? And then you take a step back from that further and it's like, do we really need these children to like define themselves by the roles that they can get based off of the way that their bodies look? Because it's like, I worry about that with like my adult actor friends being like, oh yeah, they're already calling me back for Moms and Old Women. And then to like think about that from the perspective of like, these are little kids who are already defining themselves like, I'm an ingenue. Well, I'm too tall. Well, my boobs are too big. My boobs aren't big enough. It's just
Or
like an extra layer of awful to all of the things that kids are already being fed about their bodies.
yeah, and it is like why do we have to still abide by those rules and those laws of your boobs are too big so you can't do this and that, like we're doing urine town.
That's another thing that I think about this being like a thing for kids. You know, these kids take themselves very seriously, but does it really matter? You know, like we're not doing actual Broadway, right? Like a lot of these kids have been on Broadway. They will go on to be on Broadway. But right now it's summer camp. And so does it really matter if this character's boobs are really big? I don't think it does, but it can really feel that way when you're a kid. God.
It's so I feel of two minds about, you know, everything in it.
Right. Because, like, I look back on those experiences so fondly from my own childhood, and then I also am like, because I know that considering how seriously I took myself, I would have been really annoyed and felt like I wasn't being treated like an adult if they had been like, well, this thing doesn't matter. It's okay if your body looks like that. That's okay. I would have felt like I was being infantilized. But currently, age 29, I'm like, no, infantilize the children.
Yeah, they are.
Please.
But I can hear myself doing the exact same thing of like, well, that's not what they would do on Broadway. And I'm trying to build my resume, you know?
And that's another thing that's so present in this book that was so present in my childhood too, was like, well, somebody's going to come write a review. What if there's an agent in the audience? What if there's somebody who's going to write a review of our play? Are they going to mention me? Are people going to think that I'm good? It is crazy to think about how frequently I was so worried as a literal like 13-year-old child, like, is somebody going to come write a good review of this? And if they do, are they going to mention me by name?
And that's a very big thing in the book. You know, the
Oh,
casting
yes.
directors are coming. They really, really are
They
coming.
really are coming. Like when I was a kid, I was worried that maybe I wouldn't get a personal shout out in the local paper, but these are kids who are actually performing for people who could change their entire lives. How are you not gonna get in your head about it when you are, like, for example, you're doing Fun Home for Jeanine Tesori, who wrote Fun Home.
And you and again, like when they're workshopping things for high school and middle school productions, like Sondheim was there 1 year. You become a part of the narrative and the history of the play.
Yes, it's hard to describe. Like, I feel like both of us keep trailing off and being like, it's so, but it's a feeling, right? It's hard to describe with words because it is such an evocative feeling. Being of that age, desperately wanting to be taken seriously, having this tiny piece of this thing that adults have, and just clinging to it and being just so like, oh my God, I can taste it. And just wanting that so badly. I can sit here all I want as a near 30-year-old and say, like, oh my God, no, kids should be doing this. Kids should be doing this. The fact is, kids don't want that, you know? Kids don't like participation trophies. I got so pissed off every time there was something where, like, everybody won an award. I didn't want everybody to win an award. I wanted an award.
I think what struck me as really interesting is the relationship between acting and childhood, because he puts it so well near the end. This is like the essence of acting. Acting is being authentic in inauthentic situations, reacting to what is directly in front of you. And I think like there are moments, especially there's like of the three kids, there's like the girl, there's a kid who's overweight and is like overlooked and like has troubles or something and lives in the South and has all these, is whatever. And then there is sort of the golden boy. And the golden, I think his name is Brian, the golden boy, has these moments where he is sort of called out by his teachers and is like, "You're bullshitting me right now, and I need you to be authentic." And I think that, first off, would have stopped me dead in my tracks. And that authenticity is so, it's like inherent to being a kid because you haven't learned at some points to put that on. At other points, you are only masks. You are only other identities. And it's so interesting, I think, just as a craft, that assuming others is the way that sometimes you can be the most yourself.
I think it's just so great. I think
Yeah.
that it's a great thing for kids to do. I wish that there was a way to prevent kids from thinking about it with this same feeling of like, I have to be taken seriously. I have to be good. I have to be the best. I have to be, this isn't summer camp. This is a training program.
Exactly.
As a kid, I had, I would do my summer camp at the Dallas Theater Center. And then they had this during the school year program that met on weekends called the Teen Company. And Teen Company was a really cool way for me to extend that feeling of like I'm somebody into the school year. So like I would go to school during the week and it felt like I was like Hannah Montana because I'm at school and I blend in and people don't really like me and I'm small and mousy. But then on the weekends, I go to the biggest theater in the city and some adults take me seriously in this specific context. Just a really cool thing for kids to have. Also, slippery slope, right? It's impossible to say whether it's good for kids or not good for kids because it really depends on the kid and it really depends on the way that they're processing things.
Absolutely.
I think it's good
Yeah.
for kids. I mean, it's not impossible to say. I think it's good for kids and terrible for kids,
Yeah.
right? What isn't, though?
Yeah. Every kid is different. Every parent is different. Every single day in the world is different.
There's a point at the end when he says something like, I think that it actually is like when he's introducing those like interviews that he did where he's like,
Yeah.
it's the only thing that I've been wanting to talk about. And that's like my experience of specifically the last week. I've been like poking at it on and off since we initially agreed to do this. But like more recently, I've been like, oh, I have to tell you about Stage Door Manor.
Yes. Then it feels like it seems like we've wrapped up. I feel like I've covered everything I want to cover.
I mean, I think I probably have too. Just the way that these kids talk to each other is just so funny to me.
It is such an odd experience reading it. So you, of course, you can only assume like, God, what is this like to be there? Would you consider it required reading?
I don't know if I'd call it required, but maybe like it's recommended reading.
Yeah.
I think it's a fun deep dive to take as an adult into this world that is either going to be completely foreign to you or that is going to like harken back to when you were a kid and you took yourself very seriously. I think that that's kind of like the eternal hilarious thing about childhood is while you're in it, I think that so many people are like so desperate to
Yeah.
grow up and be taken seriously. And then you're an adult and you're like, oh my God, can I please just go to summer camp?
Yes. Yeah. That's life. Yeah, I think, and maybe not required, but I think good to know about. A fun way to spend, a few afternoons reading, certainly.
Yeah, and it's very funny the way that you as an adult get so caught up in that
Yes.
last scene where it's the day of the show and you don't know if Rachel's going to be able to go on and Harry is his show's being moved into the other room and you don't know what's happening. It's very intense, very evocative of what that would have actually felt like, I think. So no, not required, but like give it a chance, why don't you, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you so much. This was like,
Course.
I'm really glad I read it. Is there anything you'd like to plug as we round out?
There's nothing for me. You know, if you want to follow me on Instagram, I'm at gokelpgo. Other than that, I think that everybody should try birding.
Yeah.
What I'd like to plug, the concept of going outside and looking at birds.
Hell yeah. Very welcome here. Well, then I will turn off the recording.
Okay. Yeah.